Make sure you announce that the songbooks come back too.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much everybody for coming for the Friday evening Bhakti Vriksha program today. We are very honored and fortunate to have with us two sannyasis today. I think first time in the history of all Bhakti Vriksha. Two sannyasis on the same day. So we'll welcome them in the ISKCON Vedic style by loudly chanting Hari Bol three times.
Hari Bol! Hari Bol! Hari Bol! Hari Bol!
Niranjan Swami Maharaj is a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. He is an initiating guru in ISKCON and he is a member of our governing body commission. Maharaj has been traveling and sharing the teachings of Srila Prabhupada and Bhagavad Gita since 1972. I think that goes back before some of us were even born. He travels all around the world, but focuses more on Europe and North Americas, especially in a lot of disciples in Russia, Ukraine, and here. And we are very fortunate that Maharaj, gives us some time, and also brings exalted devotees with him to ISKCON, Connecticut. And this time, it's His Holiness Dhir Shant Maharaj. Who's visiting ISKCON Connecticut for the first time. Dhir Shant Maharaj is also a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. And I think he has also been in ISKCON since 1972 or 71, Maharaj?
72.
Okay. If you go to Maharaj's website, it has very interesting details. Maharaj also shared during the Wednesday program how he joined. But I don't want to talk for too long because that takes away from the class time. Maharaj is known for his humorous classes, very interesting online japa talks, japa workshops, and hearty program for children, for which I am really considering drafting him one day. How to do program for children.
You better do it fast, he's living soon.
I have to draft some more people who would be willing to do it.
Sunday I will.
Sunday? You'll train us?
Sunday I will do one program for the children.
Hari! Maharaj, are grown up children also allowed?
Well, some parents should be there because.
Okay, I'm very happy to do Sunday school this Sunday. And actually, it's my turn. So, one more request. Please send back the song books.
Well, you can keep them so we're finished with them. It's just that at the end,
at the end of the program.
People sometimes forget they have them in their pockets.
Yeah. Bring them back before you leave. So, we'll start with the class very shortly. We'll have question answers after the class. Then short kirtan followed by Krishna Prasadam. Thank you very much.
I don't know how much of a class it will be. I was going to chant some bhajans and speak a little bit from them.
Hari Hari.
And if Maharaj wishes to speak, he's certainly welcome to. But we'll leave that up to his spontaneous desire to speak on the topics of at least of this bhajan. Actually, I was inspired to chant this bhajan a few nights ago in Tawako by Maharaj's class. He gave a class from the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita about controlling the mind. And he spoke a lot on the topic about controlling the mind. And as soon as I heard the topic about controlling the mind, I thought of this bhajan by Govinda Das Kaviraj. He's speaking to his mind. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, for one who controls his mind, it's his best friend. One who fails to control his mind, it's his worst enemy. And he also says that for one who conquers a mind, super soul is reached and he attains tranquility. For such a man, heat and cold, happiness and distress, honor and dishonor, they are all the same. In other words, by controlling the mind, one can transcend the dualities of this world. And we oftentimes quote also a verse from the 11th canto of the Bhagavata, which very much relates to this bhajan. It's a verse spoken about, again, about the mind. Spoken both about the mind and spoken about the dualities of the material world which arise when one is thinking or seeing things separate from Krishna. When one does not control the tendency of the mind, whereas the verse describes the tendency of the mind is just to see things separate from Krishna. And it is Bhajan Govinda Das Kaviraj is saying, O mind, worship Krishna, meditate on the divine son of Nanda in this way, because by meditating on him, you'll become fearless. Meditating on Krishna is the only way to truly transcend the dualities of this world. Because duality, we generally think of duality of good and bad, as Krishna himself says. Good and bad, heat and cold, happiness, distress, honor, dishonor. Something is good. Vaitre badra badra gyan sabha marudama e bala e manda e sabha brahma. Lord Chaitanya was speaking to Sanatana Goswami, describing that when we think this is good and bad, it's all mental speculation, it's all a mistake. He calls it manodama. What is manodama? Can anyone tell me what is manodama? It is the religion of the mind. It is not. Dvaite dhadra badra gyan sabha manodama. E bala e manda e sabha brahma. To think this is good, this is bad, it's all a mistake. He was actually speaking to Sanatana Goswami, giving some very important instruction to him. Sanatana Goswami was thinking that his body was so useless because he had contracted by drinking bad water in the forest of Jarakunda. He had contracted these bad sores in his body. And he was thinking, what is the use of his body? His body is oozing blood from bad sores. It can no longer render any seva, proper seva. Better I give up this body. And Lord Chaitanya said, oh, to think this way is duality. Lord Chaitanya was trying to convince him that actually this body belongs to me and you don't have a right to take it away. I think one of his arguments is used was Dvaitre Badra Badra Gyan Sabha Manodama. You're thinking in terms of the religion of the mind. This is good, this is bad. So, Govinda Das is saying, to his mind, please meditate on Krishna, because when I meditate on Krishna, I transcend duality. Why? Because when one sees Krishna everywhere, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, for one who sees me everywhere, sees everything in me, I am never lost to him, nor is he ever lost to me. This is transcendental consciousness. Sometimes people say, this is not so easy to always think of Krishna. Madmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji madnamaskaru. Right. In fact, this verse in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, always think of me, worship me, offer your homage unto me. Surely you will come to me. And the next verse Krishna says, Sarvadhamma puritya jyamami kam shalanam vaja. Aham tum sarva papi bhova. Mokshi shami masucha. He says, abandon all dharmas, all varieties of religion, and surrender to me. And our Vaishnava Acharyas explain that the reason why Krishna states this verse, Sabha, in the previous verse, the Manmana Bhava Madhbhakto, because Manmana Bhava Madhbhakto, all the components of surrender are in that verse. They're all the components. When Krishna says, surrender unto me, all, what is he saying? Sometimes we think surrender means, well, I have to do something I don't want to do. Sometimes people surrender. They have this conception, surrender means like in a war, when you wave a white flag. Right? You know, like, surrender means that you give yourself up to the superior strength, and they'll come in with ball and chain, and they'll drag us away, and they'll put us to work, hard labor. I surrender. Defeat is inevitable. I'm left with no choice. It's either surrender or die. And better I surrender. And although I know it's not going to be a very pleasant outcome, I have no choice. And sometimes people have this conception when Krishna says, abandon all varieties of religion and surrender to me, that he's actually imposing this kind of surrender. You know, all right, it's time to wave the flag. Now I'm going to come in and take all of you. This is why I come. After all, what I said in Bhagavad Gita, Dharma Sangstar Pranataya Sambhavami Yuge Yuge. He says, I come to reestablish religious principles. Padarjanaya Sadhanambi Vinashaya Chibushkitam. I come to deliver those who are pious, annihilate the miscreants, reestablish religious principles. I'm coming to force you to surrender to me. But actually, Krishna is not that kind of person. And therefore, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, when he talks about surrender, then he's talking to all the components of surrender, which he's discussing in that 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, found in Manmana Bhava Madhbhakta Madhyajima Namaskar. All the components of surrender are found in thinking of Krishna, giving our minds to him, as Govindadas is praying. My dear mind, please simply meditate on the divine son of Nanda, because by meditating on him, one becomes fearless. Then he says, one can cross the ocean of material existence in the association of saintly persons, a durlabha manava janama satsang, satsangye, by satsang, association of saintly persons. This is the method of crossing over the ocean of worldly existence. So, it's a different type of surrender than the type of surrender that we sometimes mistakenly conjure up if we don't know Krishna. Those who actually know Krishna know that Krishna is not a very hard taskmaster. He's not coming with whips to beat and to force us into hard labor. Although he is giving us a difficult task to always think of him and remember him, especially for those who are inclined to forget. And therefore in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna establishes his various levels of submission. He says, the best is always think of me, fix your mind upon me. But then he says, Ata chatang samadhatam nashik nosi mai stiram, abhyasa yogena tato mami chatam dhananjaya. He says, if you can't fix your mind upon me, yeah, he's given us a concession. He knows it's not always the easiest thing to do, to think of Krishna 24 hours a day. He says, if you can't fix your mind upon me, then what does he say? Then follow the regulative principles of Bhakti Yoga. In this way, cultivate the desire to attain me. Sometimes when people hear this, they think, oh, that means Krishna's telling Arjuna to not eat meat, fish, eggs, not beer. No gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex. But actually, no, that's not what Krishna's telling Arjuna, to follow the regulative principles. He's not telling Arjuna to do these things. These are the regular principles of human life. He's telling Arjuna to follow the regular principles of bhakti yoga, which means to regulate our lives and thinking of him. If you can't think of me, oh, he said, regulate your life so that you can think of me. That's what he's telling Arjuna. Put your life, many times people ask the question, how? Maharaj, you know, I cannot get myself to chant 16 rounds every day. You know, that's so many other things, so many other priorities. Family life. It's easy for you sannyasi guys. You don't have to deal with what we have to deal with. We have to work, we have to pay the bills, we have children, you know, they have to go to school, to think about their education, the future, not to speak of medical. Every time he gets a cold, they gotta take him to the doctor. My insurance doesn't cover everything. That's copay, I have to pay half of it, and sometimes it is too much. What to speak of, you know, the food prices are going up, and rent, and, you know, and I don't want to buy a house, and I need a car. Maharaj, yes, you can do these things, but I got so many things I have to do. And it's like, and how do I prioritize my, these, can't, you know. Hey, we hear these things sometimes, right? So Krishna does, yes, he says that follow the regulative principles of bhakti yoga. Follow the regulative principles of bhakti yoga means to regulate your lives in such a way that so that every day you're thinking of Krishna. Because he knows you can't think of him always. That's why he gave the concession to Arjuna. In fact, he gave other concessions too after that. But we'll discuss this concession because we're discussing bhakti yoga tonight. He gave other concessions that if you can't follow the regular principles of bhakti yoga, then you can work and offer the fruits of your work to me. And if you can't do that, then you can give in charity. And if you can't do that, then just make sacrifices. But if you just make sacrifices, at least you're getting on the right foot, because human life is meant for making some sacrifice. And if you sacrifice for some higher cause, then gradually you may come to realize that the best cause is the sacrifice for Krishna. So Krishna knows how to make his different concessions. But we're talking about bhakti yoga. In bhakti yoga, Ata Chitang Samatatum Nashik Masi Maistha. You can't fix your mind, follow the regulative principles of bhakti yoga. In this connection, we oftentimes quote one verse. Prabhupada would often many times quote this verse. I would also many times quote the verse with Vishnu, but somehow it's not coming to my mind. Smartavyam satatam Vishnu Vismartavyam nadatuchi Sava vidhivisedasyo etayo eva kinkara. I think it's Vishnu Purana. Smartavyam satatam Vishnu Vismartavyam nadatuchi. Where it is stated, always remember Krishna. That's the goal. And never forget Krishna. All the sava vidhi nisheda. All the vidhis, what are the vidhis? Vidhis are the prescribed activities meant to help us to remember Krishna. And what are the nishedas? Nishedas are the activities we should try to avoid because they distract us from Krishna. Just like generally when Vaishnavas, they take their vows at the time of initiation, they have vidhis and nishedas. Vidhis, prescribed activities. I vow that every day I will chant minimum 16 rounds Hare Krishna Mahamantra. That's helpful for remembering Krishna. And nishedas, I vow that no intoxication, no illicit sex, no gambling, no meat eggs. So these are nishedas. So, did I hear an echo? Smartavyam satata Vishnu, vismartavyam najatushit, satjatushit, sava vidhi nisedasyo. So in this verse, it is recommended that one should accept vidhis and nishedhas, prescribed activities which are beneficial for remembering Krishna, and to avoid certain activities which cause us to forget Krishna. But there's an important point made in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes a commentary to this verse, and he raises a very important point. He says, if one always remembers Krishna, then why does he have to worry about doing the things that cause him to forget him? Right? Just like there's a verse in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam which describes the Paramahansas. Paramahansas who have accepted Krishna within the core of their hearts, they're attracted to the topics of Krishna spontaneously. They only speak about Krishna because they've taken Krishna within the core of their hearts, and Paramahansas, they only speak about Krishna constantly, as if it's ever fresh. And Shukadeva Goswami says they are spontaneously attracted to speaking about Krishna in the same way as materialistic persons are spontaneously attracted to speaking about women and sex. Right, 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. 10th canto. Right? A materialistic person, what's in his heart? Well, whatever's in his heart, then he'll spontaneously, doesn't take much to bring it out. Right? What he's always meditating on, it will come out very quickly. If he's always meditating on these things, it doesn't take much to stimulate some discussion about these enjoyable activities. Why? Because it's in his heart. He's always meditating, spontaneous. So Shukadeva Goswami says, Paramahansas, they're also spontaneous. Paramahansas, they're spontaneous because they've accepted Krishna within the core of their hearts. Whatever they see makes them think of Krishna. They don't see anything separate from Krishna. They're Paramahansas. And therefore, Prabhupada even uses an analogy in this connection. He says that just like a parent, everyone can relate to this with his children, but a parent has deep love for the child. When the parent hears the voice of the child, they see the child. When they see the toy of the child, they don't see a toy. Why? Because, right? They immediately make the connection. They see the child. They see the shoe of the child. For somebody else, it may just be a shoe. But the parent knows whose shoe it is. They see the child. Why? Because child is there, the affection is there, deep within the heart. Whatever they see stimulates remembrance of the child. So he says, in the same way, for one who has love for Krishna, he sees everything connected to Krishna. Therefore, Paramahansas, who accepted Krishna within the core of their heart, whatever they see stimulates in them the enthusiasm, the desire to hear about Krishna, to speak about Krishna, to remember Krishna. So why do Paramahansas have to think about avoiding those things which will cause them to forget Krishna? They're always thinking about Krishna. Smarta vyamsa tatam vishnur. They're sufficient. Always remember Krishna. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes the point that because this verse is describing the nishedhas, the word satatam here in this verse has a different meaning. Because those who are always meditating on Krishna, they don't have to think about, well, I better not say anything about my boss today. I better not talk about my main topics. I have to avoid. No, there's no question of, they're spontaneously talking about Krishna. But since the verse talks about nishedhas, the word smartavya satatam, instead of meaning always, it means every day. Every day. This is what Krishna is saying in the verse in Bhagavad Gita for Bhakti Yoga. Right? He's Atachitam Sadmatatam Nashik Nosim Na Istiram Abhyasa Yogena Tato Mami Chaptam Dhananjaya. What he's saying is that every day one has to mold his life in such a way that he thinks of Krishna. And therefore, in answer to that question, Maharaj, we always get, how to make this remembering Krishna a priority? Prabhupada, how many times does he use mold our lives around? Look it up. Go in the Veda base, look it. How many times does he use this expression, mold our lives around? He's emphasizing the point that yes, our priority is just like we eat every day. Why? Well, most people say because they get hungry. Some people will say, if I don't eat, I'll get sick. And if you wait long enough and don't eat, it may even produce even worse repercussions. Some people fast to death. So we eat. We find time to eat. Why? Because there's an urgency. There's a need. It's either my hunger needs to be satisfied, or my palate needs to be satisfied, or something needs to be satisfied. And I can't wait till tomorrow for it. So in the same way, Krishna is saying, we have a need. We have a need to mold our lives in such a way that every day at least we're doing something that's helping us to remember Krishna. When a devotee makes a vow, then he actually makes that vow because he's come to the platform, he's convinced that yes, I've made a commitment. I made a vow. I was doing this because I think of initiation. There's a story in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Murari the Hunter. Prabhupada says that when Murari broke his bow, he said this was initiation. You know that story, Murari? It's a nice story. A nice story. I'll tell the story. There's a story of Murari the Hunter, which is the story is told actually to make emphasis of the value of association of devotees, which is relevant to Govinda Das is saying, Durlabha Manava Janama Satsangye, is to emphasize the value of association of devotees. And it begins by telling the story of Narada Muni. And Narada Muni, he was one time returning from Vaikuntha after seeing the Lord. And he came to Prayag. And he was coming again to this world after returning from Vaikuntha to take a bath. And when he came to Prayag, he saw before him on a path, he saw an animal with an arrow in its body. And the animal was writhing in pain. I think it was a deer. Yes, it was a deer. First he saw a deer, then he saw a boar, then he saw a rabbit. So first he saw the deer. And the deer was writhing in pain. And he went a little further and he saw on the path, on the same path, was a boar. And the boar had been shot by an arrow. And the boar was also writhing in great pain. And then, as he walked a little further, he saw a rabbit. And the rabbit also had been similarly shot by an arrow. And the rabbit was writhing in pain. He was trying to figure out, how did this happen? And he looked off in the distance and he saw, a little bit off the path, behind the tree, was a man dressed in black behind the tree, and he was pulling out his bow and arrows. And he immediately made a connection. He understood that that must be the reason for this. So he went off the path, and when he went off the path to approach the man behind the tree, and all the animals, other animals that were present there, they fled in fear, because he made them run. And when he made them run, then the hunter came out from behind the tree and he was very angry. What have you done? What have you done? You've made all the animals flee. Now I have no more animals to have killed. And Narada Muni understood. He said, well, so you must be the person responsible for this. Can I ask you a question? Why are you doing this? He said, why are you? He said, my name is Magari. He says, my father has taught me from birth to half kill the animals, and I derive great pleasure from half killing them. And Narada Muni understood that this is a terrible offense to half kill, to willfully cause pain to these creatures. And he told Magari, he said, I have one humble request from you. That's what he said. I have a humble request. I come to ask you from you a gift, is what he actually, the way it's translated, Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Magari says, oh, do you want some animals? Do you want some skins? Animal skins? I can give you anything, whatever you like. I have so much. And Narada Muni said, no, I'm not interested in animals or animal skins. He said, I've come to beg from you one small gift. He says, to kill animals because you're a hunter is a minor offense on your part. He says, but when you intentionally kill them, half kill them, to cause them pain, he said, this is a very severe offense. And because of this offense, all these animals, they will come back and they will kill you. And he explained to them about the laws of karma. And he explained that the difference. He said, when you're a hunter has to kill. He says, okay, you have to kill. It's your prescribed duty. You hunt. But in comparison to half killing them and causing them pain, this is sinful reactions are so great. So Magari was listening very intently upon Narada Muni's instructions. In fact, recently, I'll say one other thing in this connection. It made me think of a verse. It made me think of a verse also in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This verse was spoken by the Avanti Brahman, where he describes pain. He says that sharp arrows which pierce the chest and enter the heart are not as painful as the arrows of the insulting words of a materialistic person, which pierce the heart and become lodged there in the heart. And he was actually giving the example that when the arrow pierces the heart and kills, that's not as painful as piercing the heart and becoming lodged there and living. And he uses that analogy that the insulting words of a materialistic person are meant, intended for one reason only, to cause pain. And it's just in the same way. Like Magari, he was half killing his animals. Narada Muni said, better to kill them because you're a hunter. But if you half kill them, you're doing it only to cause them pain. And it's the same thing of a materialistic person who insults people simply to cause them pain, for no other reason. I want to see the pain. I want to see them suffer. In fact, Jiva Goswami explains that this activity is the symptom of disrespect of living entities. When Lord Chaitanya says that one should respect all living entities, it means that one should never willfully, intentionally cause pain to other living beings. That's respect. And disrespect is to willfully cause pain. So, Narada Muni was telling Magari, you're half killing them. Please just kill them. And then Magari was understood as a result of this association with with Narada and hearing from him that he had been committing, and he said, ask Narada Muni, how do I counteract it? The reactions that I'm going to get from half killing all these animals. Well, the first thing Narada did was he brought back to life the animals that had been half killed, and immediately the arrows were taken out of them, they completely healed, and they ran off and left the scene. And then Narada Muni began instructing Vagari, and he told him, I said, first thing you must do is you have to break your bow. And then, what does that mean? Prabhupada explains in the commentary of the verse that breaking the bow for Vagari meant this is initiation. He says when a person breaks the bow, it means he breaks his conception, his bodily conception of life. He breaks his attachments to engaging in activities which are causing pain to others. He makes a commitment that from this day on, I'm going to atachitang samatakam nashik nosi maistiram abhyasa yokena tato mama chapadananjaya. I'm going to regulate my life in such a way that I'm remembering Krishna. I may have many other things I have to do, but I mold my life. Now, I've made this vow. I'm going to chant 16 rounds a day, and I'm going to follow these principles. It's not going to be easy to follow these principles unless Vishaya Vinivartante Naraparasyade, you know, unless there's some taste that comes from chanting and from hearing. So, Prabhupada says, breaking the bow means breaking one's conception, his previous conception about how to live one's life simply centered around enjoyment of the body, and to change his conception that now I mold my life in such a way that everything is done for increasing Krishna consciousness. I work for Krishna. I maintain my family because they need to hear about Krishna and their bodies need to be maintained. I provide them a place to live because the deity is the center of their home and it's his home. And as Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes in his songs that he's just like the dog who stands outside the house and the deity is the proprietor of the home and he simply guards the house for behalf of the Lord. So in so many different ways, our Vaishnava acharyas are giving us this a way, a method to break our connection with the bodily concept of life and to mold our lives in such a way that every day we can think of Krishna. The result of the story of Magari the Hunter, it goes on to describe that how Magari actually, he took up the instructions of Narada Muni, he broke his bow, and said, but and he was a little hesitant at first. He says, if I break this bow, how will I live? This is my means of livelihood. You're telling me to give up my livelihood? And Narada Muni told him, don't worry, I'll take care of all these things for you. Of course, there's some deeper meaning to all of these things. It's, we should not think of it in terms of that we give up our livelihoods. This is not what's being recommended. That break our bow means that, okay, I give up my job, I give up my work. No, Rupa Goswami has taught us anasakta saya vishyant itaham upayunjata nirbandha krishna sambandhe yukta raragam uchite. He's given us the method that we use for Krishna. That is better renunciation than to renounce. We renounce the spirit of enjoyment of our work by putting Krishna at the center, and by using our bodies for hearing about him every day, using our ears to hear about him, using our tongues to speak about him, using our minds to remember him. And in this way, smartavyam satadyam vishnava vismartavyam najakichit, every day, not always, Krishna's giving the concession, not always, because it's not so easy to always remember him. But at least every day, we should make that effort to remember him. This is what Govinda Das is explaining in his bhajan, my dear mind. Of course, he's telling us to always remember him. have become fearless. But as a result of dissociation of Narada Muni, when Magari heard those instructions, he decided that he would break his bow. He gave up his livelihood, and Narada Muni told him to give up everything and to he and his wife should live in a simple hut to worship Tulsi Devi and chant Hare Krishna. And the result was is that many people, when they heard what Narada Muni had done by transforming this hunter into a great Vaishnava, they began bringing alms to him. And he had everything that he required for the maintenance, but he would only take whatever he needed, and he would redistribute the rest. And then one time, Narada Muni was coming with Parvat Muni. He wanted to introduce Parvat Muni to Magari. And Magari, when he saw Narada and Parvat Muni off in the distance, he was about to do full dandavats, but he stopped. He didn't do it. But the reason why he didn't do full dandavats is because he saw there were some ants on the ground, and he didn't want to crush them. So he took his chadar, and with his chadar, he swept the ants away. And when all the ants were away from the ground, then he did full dandavats before his spiritual master. And Parvat Muni could immediately understand that this is what it means to get the association of a Vaishnava. That even a person like Magari the hunter, who took great pleasure in half-killing animals, by the association of Narada Muni became a great Vaishnava, so much so that he wouldn't even think of crushing an ant. He would not even think of causing pain to an ant. This is Durlabha Manava Janama Satsangi. This is the benefit of getting the association of a Vaishnava. And this is what Govinda Das is recommending. I said I was going to read the purport, it just dawned on me. The bhajan Prabhupada gave a purport to this bhajan also. But maybe I've already talked long enough. Maharaj, would you like to say something?
Chaitanya Vanau Vishnam Stapitangi Bhutu Swayam Kadamaya Vidati Swavanantika Panchakautu Vishat Vikasindu Vayavacha Atitananam Bhavanebhyo Vishnavedyo Shri Krishna Chaitanya
Shri
Krishna Chaitanya
Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
When our society was not so mature and was quite young, there was a fight between the grihasthas and the sannyasis. The sannyasis would preach to the brahmacharis, when you go out on the street and distribute your books, don't distribute any books to any women. Because if you distribute books to women, they may become devotees, And if they become devotees, you may have to marry them. So don't distribute to the women. In those days, women were tolerated more than appreciated. And they had to sit and listen to many classes in regards to the fact that in comparison with men, they are less intelligent. So naturally, this wasn't very encouraging, to say the least. And in fact, I went to one seminar also that a sannyasi was giving. I was a grihastha myself at the time, The name of the seminar was The Hells and Horrors of the Grihastha Ashram.
It was a seminar. It was a seminar topic.
Yeah. I won't say who was giving it. I sat through that seminar and I was thinking, he really doesn't know the ecstasies of the Grihastha Ashram. Because in fact, you know, Maharaj was saying how, yes, we as sannyasis, our life is very simple. We may do a few services during the day. And, you know, that's about it. We give a few classes, we do a few kirtans. Our life is very simple. But the Grihastha Ashram is quite difficult. It's intense. But we have to see it positively. And the positive aspect of the Grihastha Ashram is that because there's so many things to do, and because we're doing it for Krishna, there's so much more opportunity to make spiritual advancement. How about that? Does that encourage you? And in fact, what I'm trying to say is there's never a boring moment in the Grihastha Ashram. It's so ecstatic. So much opportunity to surrender to the lotus feet of God. This is my personal experience. And I'm very happy that I actually went through the Grihastha Ashram to have that experience. Maharaj was talking about priorities. We have to prioritize our life. And there's a nice little story in this regard. There was one professor. He was giving a biology class. And he had a glass container on the table. And he filled the glass container up with golf balls, right to the top. And he asked the students, "Is this container now full?" And the students said, "Well, yeah, you can't get another golf ball in there. It's full." But from underneath the table, the professor got a bag of pebbles, or small stones. He shook the container, the pebbles went in between the golf balls and right up to the top. He asked again, "Is this container now full?" And the student says, "Yes, it is definitely full." Then the professor, he brought out a bag of sand, shook the container, and the sand went in between the golf balls and the pebbles, right to the top. And again he asked, "Is this container now full?" "Is it full?"
"Yes."
"No." "And who says no?"
"I didn't."
"How many says it is full?" "Who says it is full?" "Someone said it." "You're the only one." "I say it's not full, is it? What else can you put in there?"
Water.
Right to the top, and then it's full. So he gave this example of priorities in life, that we must prioritize our life, it's like we prioritize filling the container. If we filled it first with water, then there would be nothing else to put in the container. You see, the container is life itself, and all the things that we have to do in the course of a day. We have domestic things, we have social, domestic, and especially for us, we have spiritual practices. And this needs to be prioritized. And Prabhupada pointed out that if we begin our day with our spiritual practices, and whatever we say and do throughout the day, it will have that much more meaning and more potency. In fact, in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna is explaining that don't give up your duties, don't give up your work and sacrifices, it should continue in a spirit of devotion. And in one of the purports in where Krishna is explaining this, Prabhupada, he points out that if you chant your 16 rounds and follow the four Ayurvedic principles, and especially try as much as possible to chant as many rounds before you go to the work. But even so, if by the end of the day you do 16 rounds, then whatever else you do during the day is devotional service. That means raising children, it means cleaning the apartment, it means everything, the culmination of everything that you do to exist as a grihastha, it is devotional service. Don't think, Prabhupada said, don't think for one moment that you're materialists. You're Vaishnavas, Vaishnavis. You're performing devotional service. You may work in a factory, he said, you may work in a factory, but you have nothing to do with the factory, the workers in the factory, and the work in the factory. You're doing it as your service to maintain your family. And I have heard that most of you are working for IT, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, IT, they have a very, I don't know how to explain it, but I've heard from many of you how they try to work you down to the ground, you know, many hours of work. It's quite sad to hear that, because, and they also want to split up families, send the husband miles and miles away. It was actually quite demoniac, to say the least, to split up families like that. But anyway, regardless, try to see is your work, even in IT, is devotional service. If you seriously, as Maharaj was saying, mold your life centered around Krishna, pleasing Guru, pleasing Krishna, then that work is devotional service. Because what is it for? It's to maintain your family. You are devotees, you are also a devotee. So therefore, in my own grihastha life, I always try to prioritize my spiritual practices first. Because if we don't prioritize, then we find ourselves neglecting our spiritual practices. We will fill the whole day up with our domestic and social responsibilities. And then by the end of the day, there's no time, no room for our japa. You do it first. You do your japa first, as many rounds as you can in the early mornings, and that will set the pace for the rest of the day. And I just finish off with one little story, one experience that I had when I was a grihastha. My main occupation was was a Hindu priest. I would go to schools and do Hindu presentations because in the UK there's a national curriculum in the UK where all children must learn the five major religions of the world, and Hinduism is one of them. So the Ofsted inspectors, they were informing the teachers that you must call in a live Hindu priest because the book information is not enough for the children. You must bring in a live Hindu priest. So in the southwest of England where I was living, I was the live Hindu priest because none of the Indians wanted to preach their own religion, you see. Most Indians want to just make some money. So I was the one. I was the live Hindu priest, and I would come to the schools. Sometimes I would do three or four schools in a week, stay in the school the whole day, go from one class to the next, to the next, to the next. And it was very ecstatic. I had costumes. We dress all the girls up in gopi skirts and a little what do you call it? A little cloth over the head. And the boys had waistcoats. Within 10 minutes, I had the whole classroom transformed. They looked like devotees. I even put tilak on them.
Yeah.
And bindis on the girls. And I had a shrine, a big backdrop on the wall, and a table with all my pictures. And I had very, very special incense. It was called Hari Lila. And whenever I lit an incense stick and offered it to Prabhupada, that incense would gradually move around the school to other classrooms. And these are the teachers coming down wondering where the smell's coming from. It was such a great, wonderful, you know. Some incense are not so good, but this particular one was so attractive, it attracted everyone. So the teachers would come in and say, oh, can you do a presentation for us too? just on the strength of some incense being offered to Krishna. Anyway, one morning I had one teacher, you know, she was a ball of passion. You know, like everything she did was just like this. And she had me from 9 to 12 with her class. And at 12 o'clock, she went to a staff room to take some lunch. And she had completely transformed. This is how she was. The teachers are looking at her. What happened to you? She said, I don't know. Well, what did you do this morning? Well, we had a Hindu teacher. Maybe it was his incense. No. I'm not so sure if it was the incense. It was that dearest chanter. It's not what he said, but it was how he said it. And you know my class. They're the worst class in the school. And you could hear a pin drop. He transformed them too. Now, later in the day, she came to me. She said, what is it with you, dear chanter? What is it with you? I said, oh, have I done something wrong? She said, no, on the contrary, you did everything right. And she told me, she explained how, you know, she, by nature, she was very passionate. But in my presence, she became peaceful. So I said, well, I'll let you into a little secret. And I showed her my beads. And I said, before coming to the school today, I chanted for 2 hours the names of God. And that made me peaceful. And that peacefulness is rubbed off on you. So this is the power and the potency of the practices that we perform every day. Not only does the practice transform us, but it can rub off on the environment that you're surrounded in. This is a fact. Don't think that these practices are a waste of time. They're the backbone of spiritual life. They're essential. And therefore, if we mold our life, as Maharaj was saying, around these practices and principles, then you will be very happy, even as a grihastha.
How do we break our bow?
How to break the bow? As Maharaj was saying, that if we have good sadhana, mold our life around that, then everything else we do is connected. Actually, what it's called Gauna Dhamma. Gauna Dhamma, Gauna means to support, secondary. So, working, Prabhupada oftentimes uses this example, he says one person may appear to be doing one kind of work, another person could appear to be doing the same type of work, but they may be completely different. From the external point of view, they may look the same, but internally they may be completely different. One is working for sense gratification, the other is working as a support for his devotional service. And when the body is used for cultivating Krishna consciousness, then to maintain the body, which is the responsibility of the grihasthas, to maintain the body of those of their family, becomes a part of their devotional service. It's Gauna Dhamma. But without establishing the priority, then the ultimate objective is lost. Breaking the bow means the priority. Then I'm going to put the priority is everything is as a support to Krishna consciousness of myself, and especially for those who are husbands, with wives and children, because I have responsibility for my family, not just simply to maintain them, but I have responsibility to maintain their Krishna consciousness. Just like Govinda Das says here, and I oftentimes use this example, Edana Jovana Putra Tipparijana Itikich Achi Parati Tire Kamala Dala Jala Jivana Dala Mala Bhaja Huhari Parinitire. This wealth, sons, wife, youth, family, what is there in it? Just as a drop appears on a lotus leaf, such as this life. So at once let me take up the worship of Sri Hari, the only necessity. So Govinda Das is emphasizing that the only necessity is the worship of Sri Hari. Everything else becomes important when worship of Sri Hari is the priority. And I oftentimes, as I said, give the example that oftentimes we think about necessities of life as being food, clothing, shelter, air, water. But those aren't necessities of life. And someone may object, but those, of course those are necessities of life, but no, they're not. They're necessities of maintaining life in the body. But life has its own necessity. So, maintaining life in the body, okay, yes. Food, water, clothes, air, shelter. These are necessities for maintaining life in the body. But life has its own necessity. What does Govindadas says? Bhajahu hari parinitire. Only necessity of life is the worship of Sri Hari. That is life's necessity. So when we establish life's necessity, then everything else becomes a support for that necessity. And then that's Gauna Dhamma. But if we don't have that as the foundation of our life, then what is the value of all the other activities if they're not aimed at supporting the necessity of life? They're just simply aimed at supporting life within the body, which is temporary, and Krishna very clearly establishes that in the Bhagavad Gita. There's more to life than simply maintaining the body. Bhagavatam says, what is the value of prolonged life which is wasted inexperienced by years in this world? Better one moment to full consciousness, because that will enable one to search after his ultimate interest. What is the value of prolonged life? Living a long life? He says the trees live a long life. But what's the value? Is it simply living for the sake of preserving life in the body? So breaking the bow means to live with this objective in mind. That's what breaking the bow means. I will no longer live simply to maintain life in the body. I have a higher purpose in life. And when I maintain life in the body for the higher purpose, then I can maintain life in the body. And I should make every effort to do so. To maintain life in the body of my family members, because I have a purpose for maintaining life in the body. But if I don't use it for self-realization, for Krishna consciousness, like the example I always give, like what's the value of having an iPhone 10 if all you do is make phone calls? Right. All you want to do is make phone calls. You don't even need an iPhone. You can get one of those phones. Flip phones. So the human form of life is meant for more than just doing what an iPhone 3 or an iPhone 2 does. It's meant for self-realization. Why waste the human form of life just simply doing what the dogs and cats do for sense gratification, to maintain the body? You've got a very valuable gift to use it to its full potential. Don't just use it. Use the full potential. Full potential means to use it for self-realization. That's breaking the bow. That's breaking the bow.
But I have one more question. So you said that materialists are simply interested in women and sex. But in the 7th chapter, Krishna also says that I am sex life, not contrary to the religious principles. So how is it different than what you said?
Maharaj, you want to answer that question?
This is my question. Bro, can you tell the question in the mic?
Repeat the question so Maharaj gives us.
The question is, Maharaj said that
according to the 10th canto.
Yeah, materialists are simply interested in women and sex, but
simply interested.
Yeah. But in the 7th chapter, Krishna also says that I am sex life, not contrary to the religious principles. So how do we understand? How do we reconcile these two?
For grihasthas to have union with their spouses. for procreation, for producing children, devotee, Krishna conscious children. Bhaktisiddhanta once said that if I could produce Krishna conscious children, then I'll have sex, what is it, 100 times or something? He
said I would have 100 children.
Huh?
100 children.
I would have 100 children. And Prabhupada also encouraged us, he said that before having union with your spouse, you should chant 50 rounds. One devotee asked Prabhupada, but Prabhupada, how can you have union with your spouse after chanting 50 rounds? And Prabhupada said, yeah, that's the point. Ultimately, you give up these things. But it's a very important point that he's making, that if you want a special child to enter your home, then a child will enter your home, a special child will enter your home if you conceive that child in the mood of Krishna conscious. So these 50 rounds which Prabhupada suggested that we chant will attract a special soul to the womb of the mother. And we have seen, practically speaking, that I work with children. I worked with non-devotee children and I work with our devotee children, and there's a world of difference between the two. Prabhupada said himself that our children are Vaikuntha children. They're not ordinary souls. So this is the difference. The non-devotees, they have their sex life based on the bodily concept of life and ultimately for their own enjoyment and pleasure. And if they conceive a child, they can at their whim decide whether they want it or not. So, it's a completely different consciousness than a devotee family conceiving a child for the purpose of raising Krishna consciousness. Do you have children?
Yes.
How many?
Two.
Did you chant 50 rounds?
What pleasure sannyasa ashram gives, and how to train one's mind for sannyasa ashram?
What pleasure does sannyasa ashram give? Can I ask why you're asking that question?
She's watching it in India. His wife is in India. It's Facebook Live, so she's probably watching.
Actually, I read Prabhupada's chapter 16. Chapter 16, verse 1 to 3. In that, Prabhupada has, he has emphasized a lot on sannyasa ashram.
Uh-huh.
So, that's why And generally,
honestly speaking, there's no pleasure in the sannyasa ashram. Pleasure is in the opportunity to remember Krishna and to help others remember Krishna. Pleasure of the sannyasa is giving genuine pleasure to others. That's, you know, that's the pleasure of the sannyasa, seeing others become Krishna conscious. Otherwise, there's no other pleasure. It's not meant for pleasure.
meant for renunciation. But that's what Prabhupada, we could see in Prabhupada's example. His greatest pleasure was giving Krishna to others. And therefore the sannyasa ashram affords that opportunity to be able to travel, to enter into so many homes, to speak to so many people, to meet so many people, and to not be encumbered by the responsibilities that minimize that opportunity for giving Krishna to others. Of course, Lord Chaitanya said, Yari deka tarikara Krishna upadesh amara yari guru antara yadesh. And he told that to Korma the Brahmin, who was a householder. And not only that, but Korma asked Lord Chaitanya, please take me with you. I don't want to stay in this household of life anymore. And Lord Chaitanya said, no, you cannot come with me. He quoted that verse, Yari deka tarikara Krishna upadesh. He says, you should tell everyone you meet about Krishna, and if you do this, there will be no obstacles to your household and life. That's what he established for him. It was Lord Chaitanya's instruction to Korma when he wanted to leave. He said, don't forget it, you stay home. You tell everybody you meet about Krishna. So the sannyasi, he just has more opportunity because he's not encumbered at home to tell others, and that's his pleasure, seeing others being given the opportunity to become Krishna conscious. That's his happiness. Otherwise, there's no pleasure. There's no pleasure.
Still want to take it?
And how to train one's mind for sannyasa?
Train one's mind for sannyasa. Prabhupada, Satsrupa Maharaj told me this. I took sannyas from Satsrupa Maharaj in 1986. And he said, Prabhupada told him something and he shared it with me. He said, Prabhupada told him that when one becomes a sannyasi, he should never think when he enters into the house of a householder, I could have had this. He said, this is what he said. I could have had this or I could have enjoyed this. And he told me that this is Prabhupada's instruction to him. Of course, he was a householder before he took sannyas. But training the mind means first learning how to reject the temptations of the mind. Because there'll be many temptations. That type is there. But Krishna says, Vishyavanivartantenarahadasidehina, that the best way to reject the temptations of the mind is by giving the mind the best opportunity to become attracted to Krishna. And the best way is by as much as possible always speaking about Krishna. And householders can start that training as householders by Yari Dekatarikara Krishna Uvadesh. The best way to train the mind is that whoever you see, you shouldn't see them as an opportunity for my business ventures, or shouldn't see them as an opportunity for extracting something from them. You should see them as a potential servant of Krishna and tell them about Krishna. Then this way your mind will become trained and you'll learn how to see things and prepare yourself for something else. That's the best way. Many other, of course, things you can do for disciplining the mind, but that's a whole class in of itself.
Thank you, Mahat.
Am I while distributing books or asking for donation? We ask, we travel to different houses or different places and ask, hardcore people who are using money just for enjoyment, that give some part of their money so that, we can print more books and distribute. So in our heart, it is there that we are trying to ask something which they are most attached to, and it's very you know, like painful for them to give. So,
how to make it easier for them?
and we are also attached to money, so we also know the pain, you know, like how it will be difficult if we ask someone. So how we can make it very pleasant, like pleasant in the sense that they also enjoy at the end, and
enjoy.
We enjoy giving money, sacrificing it, and they understand that, you know, I'm doing it with the, you know, and at the same time we also get what we you know, minimum. Or if we get more.
It's not a question of selling books. You're not selling the book. Actually, you're selling yourself. People become attracted to you. They don't care. They'll give anything for the book. You have to be detached. And you have to be very, like, you have to share your enjoyment of these books. And that's what you do. You know, sometimes even I tell that to parents who are trying to get their children to chant japa and things like that. And they ask me questions like, you know, how do I get my son to do that? How do I get him? I said, it's not a question of disciplining and getting him to do something that they don't want to do. You share your enthusiasm with them, the things. Share your enthusiasm for the Krishna conscious things that you enjoy doing. And when you share your enthusiasm with others about Krishna conscious things you're doing, then the result is they become, it's contagious. They become enthusiastic. And they'll want to take your book because you're so enthusiastic about the book and because you're such a good person. That's the best point.
Yes, ma'am.
Yourself being Krishna conscious. You want to add something?
I was just thinking that I was in Russia once, and I think it was a Brihast Ashram seminar I was doing. And I think it was about raising children, that was the subject matter. And one of the Brihasta said to me, every morning I put my son in a cold bath. I run a cold bath and put my son in a cold bath. And I said, does he cry? He said, yeah, every morning he cries. I said, well, why are you doing it then? Oh, so that he will become more Krishna conscious. So I said to him, immediately stop this practice. If you don't stop that kind of practice, forcing the child to become austere, forcing the child to be Krishna conscious, in the later years, they will reject Krishna consciousness for sure. There is no doubt about that. So as Maharaj was saying, you be enthusiastic, they will also, that will rub off on them. They will see you chanting japa every morning, offering your food, chanting to the Lord, reading the Shastras. They don't want to let people come. Don't put them in cold baths. Don't force them to change. That's not the way to do it. Prabhupada said, raising children in Krishna consciousness means that it should be done in a fun way, a fun activity. When I do my workshops, I usually bring some magic tricks to show first, just to, you know, make them laugh, have some fun. Then I get them to chant. They think, oh, well, Maharaj, he's a magic Maharaj. Sure, I will chant. Because I've done something fun. You understand? Thank you. Thank you.
One more song.
Would you like to leave it?
No, yeah. It's Rupa Manjari.
Shri Rupa Manjari, put it?
No.
He can take two from the mother. Mm-hmm.
36.
Lotus feet of Sri Rupa Manjari are my treasure, my devotional service, and my object of worship. They give my life meaning, and they are the life of my life. They are the perfection of rasa, and they are the perfection worthy of attainment. They are the very law of the Vedic scriptures for me. They are the meaning of all my fast and penance and my silent uttering of my mantras. They are the basis of religion and activities. By the purifying process of favorable devotional service, one will attain perfection and with these two eyes be able to see. This transcendental form is shining like a moonlight in my heart, and my heart therefore shines and reciprocates. In other words, the ordinary moon lights up the night, and it shines, and its shine illuminates other objects. But the moon of the effulgence of the form of Sri Rupa Manjari shines into the heart and makes the heart also shine back to the spiritual sky. This moon shines not only in the nighttime, but day and night. Your absence from my vision is like a dose of strong poison, and I will suffer till the end of my life. Narottam Das Thakur says, please give me your mercy and the shade of your lotus feet.
Sri Rupa Manjari Pata Sehi Mora Sampada.
Sri Rupa Manjari Pata Sehi Mora Sampada.
Hey, Lord, Jesus. Devam more padachaya.
Shri Rupa Manjari Pada
Prasadam 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 Pras Amritabhavo.
Shri Amritabhavo.
Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gunagao.
Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gunagao.
Premirako Shri Chaitanya Nitai.
Premirako Shri Chaitanya Nitai.
Jai Nimai Jai Nitai.
Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya,
Prabhu Nityananda,
Shri Advaita Gadadhar,
Shrivasadi Gaur Bhakta
Vrinda,
Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna Hare Hare
Hare Rama
Rama Rama Hare Hare
Jai
His Holiness Dhirashanta Maharaj Ki
Jai
His Holiness Narendra Maharaj Ki
Jai